All right, we're recording now.
Welcome to Flicks of Doom, episode number 9. Flicks of Doom is the official movie podcast of geeksofdoom.com, found at geeksofdoom.com. Woo! With me, as always, is Justin Credible.
Yeah!
And the Empress of Doom, Eve.
They let us go.
And our good friend and long-lost podcaster, Marcus Seabury.
Yeah, I'm back.
Ow! And who are you?
Yeah, Marcus, why don't you tell us a little bit about, what am I calling you?
No,
Marcus?
I meant Seabury. You, Jen. Who are you, Jen?
I don't know. I'm just some guy. Don't worry about me. Okay. Seabury, why don't you tell us about your podcast and your blog?
In my time away, I have franchised myself and started my own website and blog. Well, I guess website, blog, podcast. It is SeaburyExperience.com, and on the regular, you can listen to the Seabury Experience podcast. I guess just my weekly musings and ramblings and a little bit of movie review and a little bit, I guess, of insight into my life these days and trying to be a good boyfriend.
Everybody needs to go check that out. Everybody needs a little bit of Seabury in their life. Today, we will be talking some news, touch on box office results. Eve will miraculously survive to talk about 2012. We will all gather around the home tree to talk Avatar and re-releasing movies. And don't forget to email us at flicksofdoom@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/flicksofdoom. And leave us an iTunes review, because that's how people will find the show. Tell everybody about it. Tell your hairdresser. Now let's jump into the news.
We have the first images of Paul W.S. Anderson's Three Musketeers.
Who wants to see a Three Musketeers without Charlie Sheen?
Yeah!
Not me.
The entire world? Dude, man! Come on, y'all. Let's just call a spade a spade. Three Musketeers, like, you know, Zorro and all this other stuff. They're just them recyclable properties, man.
That's true.
You get some young, strapping, good-looking actor there. You put a sword in his hand, you say, hey, go to work.
And this time it'll be in 3D.
Oh, yeah. Because
where the sword can go right towards your face.
Right in your face, right?
Yeah, because there's not enough films being made in 3D. No, there's never enough of that.
Of course not. Well, this one, Logan Lerman from Percy Jackson movie is going to be D'Artagnan in it, and they actually have a pretty good cast. They have what's her name from Mila Jovovich, whatever her name is. Paul W. S. Anderson is directing it, and that's his wife, so he put her in it.
Yeah.
I'm not sure who she's playing though, but she's in it. Christoph Waltz is in it, and Orlando Bloom is going to be in it, and he's not one of the Musketeers. So he's going to play
God.
A villain.
Why, Lord? Why?
He's going to play a villain in it, so.
No.
Well,
no?
We all know.
What do you want him to be?
Okay,
we all know his weapon of choice is bow and arrow, so.
No. Look, man, Orlando Bloom started an ugly period for me in movies. What I call the pretty boy action hero period. All these little dainty pretty boys. See, I was hoping Expendables would expunge all the little dainty pretty boys from the face of the earth.
I don't think Expendables was going to do anything except for not meet my expectations.
Look, he's not one of the Musketeers. He's not D'Artagnan, so he's a villain, so you should be happy.
I don't believe him as a villain because I could beat him, like, over breakfast, like, I could, like, be eating on a chicken
dish,
Orlando, and walk off.
Yeah, but look at the time period of the Three Musketeers.
But also, do you buy what's his face on Predators as the hero?
No, not
Adrian
at all.
Brody. Adrian Brody, of course not. No,
but Adrian Brody has machine gun weaponry.
Orlando Bloom should only do like sappy romantic comedy with Kirsten Dunst. They should out of like movies with each other for the rest of their life. Like, go away,
no
both.
Way. No, oh please God, no! I don't want to see him do that.
Yeah.
It's all he's good for, because he's not an action hero. Do you know why he's not an action hero to me? Because I don't believe he can kick anybody's butt.
Well, like Jen said, he's good with a bow and arrow.
Oh, right?
Yep.
But this is it takes place in the 1800s, Seabury. You know? Stallones in the 1800s.
People with muscles were in 1800, so, like, give me somebody who I believe in. Like, you know what I'm saying? I believe in the Easter Bunny more than I believe in Orlando Bloom as a credible villain in the action film. Like, yeah, come on.
I would agree with you, Seabury, only that, only if this was, like, a movie where that would matter. Like, I think Three Musketeers, with Zorro, you need finesse. You don't need some bulky, you know. I don't want Arnold Schwarzenegger starring in Zorro. You know what I mean? That's not
the
that doesn't
in
work.
Zorro.
I feel you, but I'm just saying, like, I don't want Orlando Bloom in no more action films, like, in life, okay? I want to get that from the action genre.
When this movie comes out, we're going to have to revisit this with Seabury after he's seen it.
But, Seabury, you have to admit, Christoph Waltz is going to be the main reason why you see this movie. So.
Yeah.
Dude, Christoph Waltz, that made me happy. I was like, ooh, Christoph Waltz, yes, that's what I'm talking about.
And Mila Jovovich.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
The combination of The Fifth Element and Inglourious Bastards is going to blow my mind.
Well, let's just remember who the director is, and he's doing it in 3D, and what his purpose is going to be with this film. So, who knows? This might be end up on, like, those MTV Movie Awards.
Next up, John Cusack to play Edgar Allan Poe in The Raven.
That's right. Trying to kill him in 2012 didn't work, so this is Hollywood's plan B.
I'm pretty happy about this.
I like Cusack. I don't always love his roles. But I probably told Justin.
But you always love his muscles. Ha ha! Hi-yo!
Nah, it ain't about muscles, man. I don't know, man. Cusack is cool to me. I've been a John Cusack fan since, like, they took us to see Fat Man and Little Boy, and, like, when I was in eighth grade, that was a film about, you know, them dropping the two bombs on Japan. But Cusack was in there, by the way. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just, you know, I rode with the Cues, man. I just saw Hot Tub Time Machine for the first time, what was it, Tuesday.
I like him in comedies more than I like him in serious roles, or like drama comedies, or even just dramas. I think, like, I don't know, dramas, like, if they're liked, like, I don't know. I think it'll be interesting. I want to see it anyways, just for the simple fact that it's Edgar Allan Poe story, you know, and as a kid in school, I kind of read a lot of that stuff, kind of had to, but some of it was kind of interesting.
Exactly.
So,
exactly. I had to.
But some of it was pretty interesting. So,
in this film, he's going to play Edgar Allan Poe late in his life, like just before he dies, and it's going to be in the 1800s. And it kind of reminds me, actually, Jen, of that Poe comic book, how Edgar Allan Poe becomes the detective.
Was the detective, yeah.
Right, and it's like the events that are happening are things that are happening from his stories. So this is what this film is going to be. And they said it's most like the movie Seven, which seems like it'll really...
Well, I love that movie.
Yeah, so it seems like it's going to be really intense. So... I'm wondering, though, how John Cusack will be, only because if you saw 1408, it seems like that's the type of role he'll have to be playing in this. The movie's actually called The Raven. So, I don't know. Like you guys said, he's good in those lighthearted romantic comedy type of movies, but I'm not
I didn't really like 1408 or, I mean, I didn't, we'll talk about 2012 a little bit later, but I think I really like him in comedies and I like lighthearted dramas. Like, I think he was in, what was it, The Martian Child or something like that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, that was pretty good, I remember. But, like, when it gets to kind of scary movies or serious movies, I don't buy him as much.
Yeah, he has to be frazzled and frantic, and I'm not sure. I feel like you'll get the 1408 performance, which that movie was not good. So.
The concept of the movie sounds really good. Justin, what do you think?
I'm not the biggest John Cusack fan. Tell him to go back to the 80s and say anything, Siebert. Speaking of, did you guys see that mashup they had online of Say Anything? It was a movie clip of Say Anything where he's, you know, the famous clip of holding up the boombox, but it's the song coming out of it is CeeLo's F.U.
I did not see that.
I have not seen this.
Yes, please check that out. I tweeted it under my Twitter account, but please, everyone out there who's listening, go check that out. Avatar Special Edition DVD Blu-ray is going to have 16 extra minutes on it.
That's right, Avatar fans. You're not allowed to buy, you're now allowed to buy your second version of the movie. Don't worry, you'll be able to waste your money on the 3D version as well soon enough.
Yeah!
Wow. I mean, I liked Avatar. I really thought it was a good use of 3D. I mean, was it the greatest story in the world? Yeah, but, you know. I guess I enjoyed it for what it was. I don't know. I've yet to buy an edition. Maybe I'll buy it or something.
Now, here's the question. Do you think it would have been news that would have upset you more if you had already bought the Blu-ray and then also went and gone and seen the 8 minutes of extra footage and spent all that money and then realized you still haven't seen the entire movie?
Yeah, probably, because actually I've been thinking about seeing this re-release in the movie theaters, man. I've been toying with that idea. So,
which is one of the reasons why, as like you, I haven't bought anything yet because I wanted to wait until the extended super mega ultra version came out so I could actually finally see the entire.
But it is the entire movie, though. You're making it seem like the movie we saw in the theater was not in its entirety, but that's not true.
But they're saying,
every film has deleted scenes. Mm-hmm. Every film.
What I'm telling you, though, is that why spend your money on the special version if it's not the full special versions? It's like if you buy Watchmen, the director's cut, and then they come out with the, what was that one called? I don't remember.
The Ultimate
Edition or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then you already bought the director's, so you have to buy another version or you don't get the full special feature.
First of all, I think a lot of people, if they want the movie, they just want the movie. Like, my grandmother wants to see the film. She doesn't care about bonus features, deleted scenes, etc. You know what I'm saying? And some people will want to just pay, let's say, $15 for the DVD and not have to pay $25 for a DVD that's packed with bonus features that they're not even going to watch.
Which I'm fine with. If they release, this is the regular version and this is the ultimate version at the same time.
But the thing is that they said when they released it, they were like, look, here's just the movie. Here, take it. And then they were like, don't worry, at the end of the year, we'll add content to it. We'll add bonus features. So you have the option.
Yeah, they said that. Not.
I mean, how many versions of Napoleon Dynamite did they release? You know how many versions of Napoleon Dynamite they released?
They didn't say it to the public, though, because I had to go warn all my friends that were going to go buy that movie. You're not buying the all the special features, the and they all stopped and they didn't buy it because
but that's what I'm saying. Like
they were going to buy it though, and I'm sure
Avatar.
Look, you can tell.
All you have to do is look at the back and be like, oh, there's nothing but the film in this package.
Yeah, but if they don't know that there's another version coming out that has all that stuff on it, which nobody did.
Do you want James Cameron to call everyone personally and be like, by the way, before you buy my film on DVD, it doesn't have bonus features?
It's called a press release.
No, but they wouldn't do that. That wouldn't be a marketing thing. Okay, don't buy this version. Buy the next version. They would
or
just
don't release it until you've got the ultimate version.
They didn't keep it a secret. It was not a secret. Everyone knew. It was all over the news.
No, everyone as in people like us. Yeah, that's fine. But
anyone who reads the news will know it. It's not, James Cameron did not call me personally to tell me.
But I'm saying that it's a marketing ploy to get...
I'm just saying, wouldn't it be cool if James Cameron did? I'm like, hey, Mr. Cameron. By the way, how's your ex-wife Linda doing? I always thought she was quite fetching in Terminator 2. Is it too soon? I'm sorry.
But my gripe with the whole thing is that if you don't have all the versions ready, don't release it. Because
why would they do that? There are people that want the DVD right away. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I'm saying? They want it right away. They're like, I don't want to wait until November until you take all that motion capture that you filmed and render it into an actual...
Especially for the movie that is the highest grossing movie of all time. There's a lot of demand for people that want the movie on DVD and want to watch it in their homes. So he put out a version for them because...
I don't buy that. I buy that... They wanted to put space between. I buy that they probably were done rendering that stuff right after they finished releasing that regular DVD, and they could have just waited a couple of weeks. I think that the studio, and I don't think it's James Cameron's fault. I'm not blaming him. I'm blaming the studios. I'm sure he loves it, though, is that they were like, okay, well, here's an opportunity to get people to buy three versions of this Blu-ray DVD. And here's an opportunity to re-release this into theaters with 8 minutes of footage and still get them to buy that 16 minutes of extra footage.
Yeah, but if you don't want to, you don't have to. Like, you don't have to
watch
it more than
one time. And I'm not saying that option's not out there, but when the general public, which is who I'm talking about, doesn't know these things, they're going to end up getting screwed out of
$100. The general public does not care about bonus features. I don't know anyone besides people in our group that actually watches bonus features on DVDs. Not one person.
But I
ask all the time people. I'm like even me, like if I like a movie, sometimes if there's the $15 version and then there's the $25 version with bonus features, I say, I don't care. I don't need the bonus features. I'll just get the $15 version.
Mm-hmm.
But I do know people like that, though. And especially with Avatar, I think that's one of the biggest places that people will watch the special features.
Yeah, but if you're that big of a fan of Avatar, you will not care that you bought one DVD. You know how many duplicate DVDs I have? You know how many versions of The Princess Bride I have? So if you're that big of a fan, and obviously there are a lot of fans, you will not mind that you bought a DVD back in – when did the DVD come out? In April? Or something. And then at the end of the year, at Christmas time, they came out with a bigger, better version of it. Like, you won't care. Right? Most of you will just, you know, if you care that much, you'll go to that Hastings place you guys are always talking about, and you'll just go and, you know, or sell it back to Amazon or what have you.
Seabury, you want to tell our listeners who don't live in the South about Hastings?
Oh, yes, man. Hastings, that is like geek Valhalla, boy. It is a very cool store that they had new and used CDs, DVDs,
books,
new and used, yeah, books,
video games,
novels. Yeah.
And if you trade in video games there, you get crap load of credit for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and you can trade things for cash or store credit. I'm pretty fond. Well, I was pretty fond of them until lately. They haven't been taking back my graphic novel, so now I have beef with Hastings. I'll be releasing a diss track by the end of the year. But now, well, yeah, man, Hastings is an awesome, cool little store. I call it a less pretentious Borders.
Well, it's unfortunate that
that's good Borders.
It's unfortunate that Hastings does not sponsor us.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like I said, you might not agree with me. I think it's all an issue of the actual studio trying to get as much money as they can.
You mean studios want to make money? I can't believe it.
Yeah, that
They're
is...
not altruistic?
Yes, sir.
I can't believe it.
Yes, my good man. I'm not saying that your points are not valid, but, sir, it is the way of things. Or if I may quote Wesley Snipes in the courtroom scene of New Jack City, it's big business, the American way.
Yeah, You have to consider it from the studio's point of view as well. They're trying to make as much money as they can, so they're giving you options, and if you decide to buy it multiple times, then that's your decision.
But the fact that I have to research to find out whether or not I should buy this version, you know.
But how would you do it, though? If you were the studio, would you put out the movie and say, okay, for anyone who wants a special, on the back of the box, would you say there's another version coming out in 6 months? Like, and then you'll...
I would release them all at the same time so that people knew what options they had.
But then you'll get people who are angry and say, why didn't you release it right away? We want it right now. Like, you can't please...
How do they know? How do they know that you could transfer it any faster than... people have become so oblivious to the simple facts of how long it takes for these things to transfer. Do you guys remember when VHSs first came out, how long you had to wait for a movie in theaters to come out on DVD and Blu-ray? Mm-hmm. Do you compare the times between which movies come out on DVD and Blu-ray from how fast they come out? Because there's some movies that still take up to, you know, 4 or 5 months, and then some of them that come out the month after. You know what I mean?
That's what, like, I'm saying. You still get people like, why is it taking so long for this DVD to come out? Why is it taking five months?
You get that anyways. They probably would have got that even if they probably did get it, even though they released it so quickly.
Yeah, but I think you'd be losing out on that business of the people who are trying to buy it right away.
No, those people are going to buy it anyways. That's my point. Like, they're going to buy it no matter what.
Why wouldn't you want to sell it as soon as possible while people are still talking about it and saying, I can't wait to see it again. I can't wait to see it again. Now,
well, obviously this is getting released fairly close to their re-release. So they had, you know, this version is getting released close to their re-release. So obviously they're getting some more hype by saying there's 8 minutes of this movie and now Avatar is back on everybody's plate, obviously, or else we wouldn't be talking about it right now.
Listen, I think would go back to see it whether it had 8 minutes extra or not.
I don't think so.
I think people
are tired of it. I think that's the thing.
Seabury, what are you going to say?
Maybe putting too much faith in human nature, but I think it's kind of accepted now. The first DVD that you'll get of a film, particularly a big tentpole event film like Avatar, would normally be the bare bones one. I mean, it's kind of become the norm. You know, they slap together the bare bones one, say, here you go, Chuckles. Then, you know, 6-7 months later, you know, you get the big freaking ginormous extra special super funky edition with flair. You know, that's kind of become the norm. And I think most really...
See, I don't think so. I think the only people I can think of that have done that is Watchmen and Avatar. Oh, obviously Star Wars is the biggest example from back in the day. But mm-hmm. I would say nowadays, I mean, Dark Knight, when that came out, I bought the extra special version. The only thing that came out after that, which was fairly close to after that, was that stupid one where you could buy it and get like the motorbike or something mm-hmm. like that.
Like I said, they did it with Napoleon Dynamite. I can remember.
Yeah, Jen,
that's
not a new practice, Jen. So I think you're just not aware of a lot of the... How many Terminator 2 versions have there been?
Like, a lot.
Anniversary editions, yeah. That's not the same thing, though.
Like, no, they're not anniversary editions. Like, whenever there's a new special feature they want to put out, or some of them have been just the same, and some of them have taken away special features. So it's not a new practice in Hollywood to come out with these special editions. And we've had DVDs for over a decade now. That's, like Seabury said, I think people are pretty savvy at this point that there's going to be another special edition. So I don't see Avatar as doing anything different with it. Plus,
the special editions that people... Like, when there's extra special features, mm-hmm. those are the ones that nobody cares about, nobody buys. So, like, mm-hmm. they're releasing it for nothing. But with this one, it's bare bones and then actual special features. There's a difference. Like,
well, like with Dark Knight, there wasn't any special... There really wasn't a lot of special features because Christopher Nolan, that's just... He doesn't do commentary and he doesn't like to do a lot of special features on it, showing you, kind of taking away the curtain. So it depends on the...
What, Incredible Hulk, Iron Man, you know, the both of those movies, they came out the same time. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's That's the thing that I'm trying to get at, is that when you got the special feature version, you got, like, I don't care about what you're, what, you know, if they add, do a new version saying that, you know, this is, it's been a year, or, you know, this is the ultimate version, blah, 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 we're adding more special features. But when you release a version with nothing on it, and then you wait, and then you release one with everything on it, and you wait a long enough time so that people are just like, fine, I'll just buy this one because nothing else is coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're like, oh yeah, something else is coming out, by the way.
Yeah, well,
man, I just don't believe that most people who got the bare bones version, I think most folks got the bare bones version, they didn't care. Like, got the movie, I'm good. Like, I just really, really, really think,
and we're,
once again, Matthew, I'm putting too much faith in humankind, that most people who, you know the game were like, I'm gonna be on the sidelines for this one. I'm gonna go chill.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, I personally stopped at least 10 people from getting that one because I knew they would want the special features.
Mm-hmm.
They were literally about to go to the store. So I personally, 10 people, and considering the fact that I don't have a lot of friends except for you guys, that probably says a lot. You know what I'm saying? Like,
well, that also says that you only know 7 people, and those 7 people are just like you.
They don't buy DVDs or Blu-rays or anything, so that's not a valid question. But if they did, I'm sure they would want.
It just doesn't apply.
Well, I'm just saying.
How many people go, oh yeah, I love this movie, so I'm going to buy the 2-disc version, right? And then they get it, and all they do is watch the movie and then put it back on the shelf. Like, it's another thing where it's almost like when you go to a place where you pay a certain amount for, like, a meal, let's say, and they're like, look, it comes with all this extra stuff. And you're like, yeah, I'll get the thing that comes with everything. And then how much of it do you actually eat? You know, it's that kind of mentality, don't you think, that they get people to buy, you know, pay extra for bonus features that they're never even going to watch.
But now they're getting them to buy 3 versions of this movie. That's my complaint. It's like...
Yeah, but not everyone is going to buy 3 versions of it.
I think that that's what they're banking on, though. That's why they're making the 3 versions, is that they're pretty sure, and they're probably right, that a lot of people, a big percentage, is going to buy every single version of this freaking movie because
you love it. Listen, if you love it, you're going to buy. If you're like, this was my favorite movie. Like, what if Inception had 3 different versions? You might go out and buy every time they re-release it because you'll say, you know what, I really love this. It's my favorite movie of the year. And so I want every little bit they're going to give me for it. But you know, if it's not, you're not going to buy 3 versions.
But I think, Jen, you're placing your dissatisfaction at the wrong people. Like, it would be like saying, okay, this movie has violence in it, so instead of blaming the parents for letting their kids watch a violent movie, you're blaming the movie itself. And so I think with this situation, you're saying that exactly what you just said, where people aren't going to go out and research. Well, maybe they should do their research and know that another version is coming out, because we all knew and we didn't have to do very much research. So it's, I think, people have to take responsibility on their own. You can't just say, okay, we have to be force-fed everything. Sometimes you have to do the research on your own and know and make a smart decision as a shopper. Okay, I know there's going to be another version, and if I want special features, then I can wait a little bit longer. Or if I just want the movie, then I can just buy this version right now. And this is kind of, with this Avatar, is kind of different than, like what you were saying, with a lot of other versions, they'll have the special features on the first one that comes out, and then they'll come out with more. Whereas with this one, there are no special features on the first release, and then the special features are coming out in the second release. But then I disagree with you that James Cameron, that these things were done, like the special features were done for this release. I think James Cameron has come out, and I believe him, that the special features took longer to do, so that's why it's taking longer to do the special features. And that's why this re-release, it took longer. Like, it took the go-ahead, giving the go-ahead from Fox to go ahead and finish all the deleted scenes. And each minute, he said, was $1 million.
So, with all the news that we've gotten about James Cameron doing other things, you don't think that he was doing those other things? You think he was working on this special features this whole time? Or, I mean, honestly, you don't think this was actually planned out to be specifically released at around a certain time, and he got to take his time? You don't think that they could have released a special feature version faster?
I don't.
No, I don't think
you guys are crazy because he's doing other things right now.
What do you mean?
Other things. Hey, Jim, let me ask you something, man.
Yeah.
So, like, when you were stopping these people, was it all like a slow motion John Woo type mantra? Just like rolling and go through obstacles? What did you, what would you like, carry, take the office linebacker, just like cackling? No! You can't buy this edition.
I actually went to my local Walmarts and set all of the copies on fire. So that's what I did. Yeah.
Oh wow.
But my main issue and your argument, Justin, I'm gonna drop it at this, is that I'm blaming the wrong people. I'm not blaming the wrong people, because my main issue with the entire ordeal is the fact that they're blatantly turning Avatar into this money making machine, and now I know Avatar 2 and 3 are probably not going to be actually have any effort put into them, because they know that people are going to go see them. It's the same thing as any movie franchise. Well, not any, because there are exceptions to the rules, but most movie franchises nowadays, and my problem with a lot of the movie franchises because of Hollywood, and this is what they do. This is, they make them into these big things. I mean, look at Terminator 3. That's what Avatar 3 is going to end up being, and this is proof of it. And I'm really upset because I actually enjoyed Avatar.
Man, I hope not. You have gone and depressed me, sir.
I've lost all faith in it, because
I don't think that's going to happen. He has a reputation. I mean, like, he's spent 10 years on Avatar.
He has a reputation Terminator.
Terminator
1 and 2 are good that he did. What do you mean he has a
reputation? And then when he finishes Avatar 2 and he's like, well, I think that's all the story I need to tell. Guess what Hollywood's going to do? They're going to say no, and they're going to say, we're going to do it now, and we're going to put somebody else in charge.
I don't understand. He shouldn't make any more films, because when he's done making his trilogies,
this is his thing, and he should come out and say, hey, look, this is what's going to happen with it, and I hope you guys realize that you shouldn't be spending money on this stupid shit, like Na'vi little toys and shit like that, whenever it's going to get to that, and that's the way it's going to be.
Please don't buy all merchandise.
Well, you're going to depress me.
Battery should get some
control. Avatar 3 going to be like Terminator 3. I'm going to put on some black and listen to Morrissey. Good Lord.
or he should get some control. When he does the contract, he should get control over his property, where he can say what they can do or not. Don't tell me it can't be done, because it's able to be done.
I mean, this gives us news sites like us, geeksofdoom.com, this gives us the way to give the information to the public. Like you were saying, a lot of people didn't know about it. Well, here we are giving the story in audio format and in the print version on the website. That's the way that we're giving this information. And the information is out there. It's not like we all knew, like I said, that this version was coming out. So I just don't think it's wrong of the studio to put out more than one version, because there is an audience that just wants the movie. So you are satisfying at least 1% of the population. And actually, there's like, you know, a lot of the digital stuff, like when you rent movie on iTunes, most of the time when you rent it through the Voodoo Box, Netflix, you don't get special features, you just get the movie. So that might be the way of the future. I don't know.
Actually, iTunes has started including special features.
Now, I don't think you heard what I said. I said most of the time. And especially when they started out. And now they have some special features, but if you look at them, a lot of them aren't that great. So it's like, why even release them if they're not going to be good special features?
So I guess I can lead us straight into our topic, which we'll go into now instead of a little bit later. And basically, it's about re-releasing movies. And I guess the reasoning behind, or maybe not even the reasoning behind it, but was it needed, you know, and should people do that, you know? I would say the biggest examples started like towards the beginning of film, and are some of the reasons why they're still at number one if you're taking inflation into account. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, and I probably am talking out of my butt right now, but The Sound of Music and Gone with the Wind, I think, were both re-released quite a few times.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the reasons why that they are still so high on the charts with inflation in, taken into account. But you also have more recent kind of movies that some of them are re-releases and some of them are releases for kind of the novelty of the kind of thing. Avatars is the re-release. Obviously we're talking about is because they added 8 minutes extra in and they kind of are trying to get people to come out and see it again. And Dark Knight, they re-released, I believe, at the time because
Box office numbers.
Yeah, they really wanted. Yeah. I think they were about to hit $1 billion or something like that. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if
they were at $996 million, I think, at the time.
And they were like, "Well, if we release it, hopefully enough people will see it, and we'll get the $1 billion." Toy Story 1 and 2 were more of the novelty thing. They were re-releasing those because they wanted to kind of show what they could do with a 3D conversion, and also to prepare people for Toy Story 3. Nightmare Before Christmas is kind of the same thing. It's kind of like a novelty. Everybody kind of still – I mean they want the Hot Topic people to come in and waste their money on the movie. That's not a very good conversion, but it's also 3D too.
I think that as long as people enjoy the theater-going experience, they can periodically re-release films. Now, how wide they release them, that's another story. But they can re-release it because, I mean, have you ever gone back to the theater to see a movie that you already own on DVD? Because I have.
I never got the opportunity to do that with Star Wars, so that would be the only thing that I probably would do it for.
I think I've ever gone back for something that I own.
Yeah, I did it with that Toy Story 1 and 2 to get ready.
Oh, yeah, I did that too, but that was more of the 3D thing. I wanted to see what they could do.
Mm-hmm.
I never got to see Nightmare.
Have you guys ever gone to, like Midnight Movies where they'll show older films? Have you ever gone to that?
I did that for Iron Man when they did it, when Iron Man 2 came out.
Yeah.
I did it for that one, but.
A lot of times that we do that with our theater, we do the whole thing. We did it when Saw, what was it, the last one, 6 came out. You could watch a marathon of 1 through 5.
Well, they did it at your theater with Twilight too, right?
Yeah, and then they did the same thing with Twilight. The first time they did Twilight, New Moon, and then this time they did Twilight, New Moon, Eclipse.
I mean, so think about it. I mean, these films are already out on DVD. They've been out on DVD. What is the incentive to go and see it at the theater, and it has to be because you like the experience of seeing it on a big screen.
But it's like, it's the same thing as like, you know, how many times nowadays have you, and this probably, you're going to say 100, have you heard of Rocky Horror Picture Show being showed and tons of people going?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Sure. That's one of the ones, the biggest examples I can think of that I in fact, there was one at Comic-Con, at San Diego Comic-Con. Mm-hmm.
When I was a teenager, I used to go all the time. My friends and I would go all the time in the village and see Rocky Horror. But that was a little bit different because that had audience participation. So it's like a little different. But
it's the theater experience, you know?
Right,
like,
theater experience.
Would you watch that same thing at home? I mean,
we just watched the last night, actually.
But I think when you go and see it in public, I think you're seeing it because you get that theater experience. And I think sometimes that applies, not all the time, but sometimes it applies to the reason why re-releases work. Like Nightmare Before Christmas, I think, kind of has that same, like, some people have some sort of connection with going and watching it in the theater for some reason, and they really want to go see it. And I mean, we usually don't get it at our theater, but we've every time it's announced to be being re-released into the theaters, we get emails like, "Oh, we want to go see that." Probably the Hot Topic kids, like I said, but
mm-hmm.
people want to see it in the theater for some reason.
You leave those Hot Topic kids in their My Chemical Romance t-shirts alone.
So, I mean, what is your feelings about... Okay, so I think we can... Perhaps we can all agree that if a film came out a long time ago and they release it in theaters, let's say for one night or 1 week or whatever, then everyone who's never seen it in theater can go see it. Or if you haven't seen it in so long and you want to see it in theater, you can. But... What do you guys think about things like when they re-release Avatar in the, you know, like in a short period of time, or The Dark Knight, they re-release it because it's popular. Like, soon after it was out of the theater, they re-release it.
Well, I know.
I just think of it as good business. I mean, it's
it definitely is, because if people want it, then you, right? I mean, you're giving the consumers what they want. You don't have to go to the theater. No one's making me go see Avatar again. So it definitely is good business.
Mm-hmm. Both of those that you just mentioned, Avatar and The Dark Knight, were IMAX movies. So for me, they have a different than if it's just a regular movie being re-released. If it's something like an IMAX movie, there's no way you're going to get an IMAX experience at home. No matter how good your home theater is, no matter how good your sound system is, you're not going to have an IMAX experience, and then you're not going to have an IMAX 3D experience.
3D, right. So I was going to say that the 3D element also.
Yeah, that's the difference with both of those movies. And I didn't get a chance to go back and see Dark Knight again in IMAX. I wish I would have, because it's not available anymore. You can't go have that experience. The closest thing you have right now is the Blu-ray, where the aspect ratio changes from the shots that were done with the IMAX cameras into the ones that were done with 35mm. And that was an amazing experience for me. That was my favorite part of seeing The Dark Knight in IMAX, was when it switched to the IMAX cameras. Like, that was my favorite thing. So I like seeing them in the theaters again if it has an incentive like that, where you can't get that experience at home.
What do you think about when they do that? That, I know that's kind of branching off into a different thing, but when they do, like, only certain scenes are, you know, IMAX or something
I don't like it. I didn't like it with The Dark Knight. Every time they switched to the IMAX cameras, the only thing it did was make me jealous and say, I wish the entire movie was done with the IMAX camera.
Did you ever see Harry Potter in the IMAX 3D?
No, I didn't get a chance to see that one.
I had that same experience. Like, I was like, why can't they just do the entire movie like this?
And
because that scene was so cool. I didn't see the last one. I saw the one before it in IMAX 3D. I don't know if you saw that one either.
I saw the one. I think it was Order of the Phoenix. Was that the?
Where it's the battle with Voldemort. That was 3D. I think it was the. I think you're right. I think it was the Order of the Phoenix, because they had that whole scene where. Where he's fighting Voldemort, and that's kind of when the serious thing happens and whatever. But that's the scene that's 3D in IMAX 3D or whatever.
Yeah, I'm looking online. It says the whole thing was in 2D, and then the final 20 minutes were in 3D.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even the final 20 minutes, because it went back into regular 2D after that too. So it's very jarring and weird. And I mean, I understand trying to get people out to the IMAX and stuff like that. But I really wish they would just film more deep, you know, because you can convert IMAX.
The technology just isn't, it's not conducive.
Yeah, I wish they would hurry up and shrink the IMAX cameras so that people could use them more easily. Yeah, because I had that same experience, unfortunately, with Transformers 2, Revenge of the Fallen. The best parts of that movie were the IMAX camera shots.
Yeah.
So I'm really looking forward to the day when you can get an entire movie like that shot with the IMAX camera.
It's got to be coming up pretty quickly if we can invent technology to do the 3D the way we have done. So, but that was kind of a branch off from our regular topic. So, but did you guys go see Dark Knight when it was re-released? Anybody?
No, I didn't.
Nah.
Unfortunately for Seabury, he lives about 3 hours away from an IMAX screen that showed that. So it also depends on the area of the country that you live in.
Do you think that their main audience was people that didn't get to see it in IMAX?
That would be interesting to see if there was some type of poll they could take to see. I don't know.
Because I would have probably went and saw it if I, you know, didn't work a lot, but you know, that's probably the only incentive would be so that I could actually see it in IMAX, because I never got to, you know.
I saw it in IMAX, but it was one of the, you know, the smaller IMAX screens, because I was actually in California.
Which, by the way, not every
came out.
Yeah, by the way, not every IMAX experience is the best, because there's some theaters that don't have very good IMAXs.
Well, but I'm at the point where I'd rather see it on the smaller version, because if I go to the bigger version, I actually hate watching movies with the gigantic IMAX screen, you know, the one that's like from floor to ceiling, that one. I absolutely hate it. I hate it so much.
Well, there's different versions now, too. There's also with XD, which me and Justin have talked about a lot, which is kind of a smaller thing. But it's like a full experience kind of thing. Have you ever seen a movie XD yet, Justin?
I haven't had a chance yet. But I prefer the smaller one when it's not shot with IMAX cameras. If it's just a film that was shot with a regular camera and then just upconverted to IMAX and kind of stretched out, I'd rather see it on a smaller IMAX screen. Actually, that's where I saw the Avatar re-release. I saw it in a smaller IMAX theater. But if it's like The Dark Knight, where it switches, or like Transformers, I'd rather see it on a bigger screen, where that's the native resolution is the IMAX format.
Yeah. I think a lot of times, if it's not an experience, they really have to justify. You know, I think the IMAX takes it into account, because not everybody got to see it in IMAX, because a lot of times when movies come out in IMAX, they'll sell out until it's gone.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I think Dark Knight did that most of the time. Like, almost every time you try to get a seat to see that, it was almost always sold out.
Yeah, and that's that limitation of the IMAX only being able to do one movie at a time and not having all the multiplex and, yeah.
Exactly. And every theater that has an IMAX will only have the one IMAX. Mm-hmm. So, but I think you have to have a reason, because I think if you tomorrow let out Hot Tub Time Machine, you know, that's not going to work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You might catch a few people that didn't get to see it, but you're not going to get the crowd that you get with Dark Knight.
You're only going to re-release movies that people want to see, like that make tons of money. A Hot Tub Time Machine like came and went, people forgot about it. Wasn't really like this huge hit.
Yeah. So re-releases, I think it's an interesting thing to do. I think if there's a reason for it, go for it. I don't generally go to see re-releases that much, because once I've seen it in the theater, I've had that experience, and I kind of want to see the next experience. And that's kind of the way I treat my theater experiences.
Yeah, that's kind of where I am, too. Because I was like, man, there's so much stuff I want to see, man. I'm like, man, I'm not going to go back and see that again, man. I'm like, you know, I'm trying to see the next film.
It's very rare for me to rewatch a film, especially in the theater. Inception, I think, was the only thing this year that I actually saw twice in the theater. I was thinking about seeing it a third time, but I got that same mentality where it's like, nah, I want to see what's next. So that's why. And you guys have any final thoughts on re-releasing movies?
I don't know. I mean, if people want it, re-release it. You know, if people go to go see it, re-release it. I know where I am in New York City, they constantly re-release movies. You know, even if it's just for the weekend, they do. And I'll go to them, and they're always sold out. People in my area like to go see, you know, film in the theaters with other people, even though it's been on DVD forever and ever. So, I mean,
I'm sure there's a market for it. Like, you know what? I'll tell you what. If they re-released the like special or any kind of Star Wars, I don't care what version of it was. I never like the 4, 5, and 6. I never got to see those in the original trilogy. I never got to see those in theaters. So I would go.
Well, that's the thing. Like, people who were too young to see it in the theater, there's that audience as well. You introducing it to a new generation.
I would watch Back to the Future in theater.
Yeah, and that's what actually I was listening to Peter Cerretta from Slash Film. It was him and the guy from Collider. I forget his name. I'm sorry, but
Frosty.
Yeah, they were talking. They were doing a video blog, and somebody asked him, "What movie? Like, if you could go back to any movie in history the day it was released, what would you go see?" And they originally were. Peter Cerretta was saying it would have been Back to the Future because that's his favorite movie of all time, but he's had that opportunity to see it in the theater on the big screen. So that's, if it's a favorite movie of yours of all time, I would say that's a good reason to go see it on the big screen. But there's a lot of people today that they don't care about that experience. They'll watch it on their iPhone. They'll watch it on their iPad, and they don't care about the optimal experience with the screen, with the sound. there's a lot of people that don't have surround sound in their homes. A lot of people don't have big screen TVs in their homes. So, yeah, there's a lot of people that just, they don't, I don't think they care as much about the theatrical experience.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. All right, so we're actually going to cover some box office numbers right before we go to the mini dooms. Justin, you want to go over the box office numbers for us?
Yes, unlike the last week where we saw five new releases, which I don't know if that's a record or not. For me, it is. I don't remember five new films coming out the same week.
It's actually happened.
Okay.
I think this year maybe we actually had that happen. I don't know if they were all wide releases, but there was a week where we had five movies at our theater that were brand new.
Yeah, this week we got two new releases, and then we got the re-release of the Avatar Special Edition. So the number one movie at the box office this week, I don't know if some people were saying this was a surprise, but judging off of these type of films before with like Blair Witch and Paranormal Activity, it didn't really surprise me that Last Exorcism came in number one at $21 million. Number two was Takers, which was the other new release that opened wide this week with $21 million. And then we have the familiars. Seabury's favorite, The Expendables, came in third at $9.5 million, which brought its total to $82 million. Eat, Pray, Love, number four, with $7 million. The other guys rounding out the top five was $6.6 million. And our old pal Inception is still chugging away. It made $5 million this last week, came in number seven at the box office, bringing its total to $270
million. And then didn't Toy Story just break a record?
Oh, yeah. Toy Story just crossed the $1 billion mark. And this is the first time in history that a studio, Disney, has had two films in the same year cross the $1 billion mark. And it makes Toy Story the most, well, it already broke that record, the highest grossing animated film of all time, not counting for inflation.
So now we'll move on to our mini dooms. Eve, you watched a little something this week? I think we've all seen, so we can all talk about it.
Oh, yeah. It was the greatest movie of all time. And I will fight you to death if you say it's not. It was 2012. And no, I kid, though, because it was actually the worst movie I have ever seen in my life. And I have a pretty high tolerance for bad movies. So the fact that I wanted to vomit after about 15 minutes of this film, and it's starring John Cusack, who I love. Okay, I love this man. I will watch anything he's in. I love him. And you know what? I was hoping he would die. Okay? And that's pretty sad because I've never hoped that John Cusack would die in a film. But this movie was so horrendous. I don't even know how to explain how horrendous it is.
You said you'd watch anything with John Cusack in it.
Uh-huh.
Being John Malkovich.
Oh!
Yeah!
Oh, boy.
All right. Next week, we'll hear from Eve on that one.
You don't like being John Malkovich?
I won't watch it because I hate John Malkovich. I hate it when he's in a movie. I don't want to see it. So these guys have been telling me I have to watch this movie because it's really good. And I'm like, but I hate him.
It really is. Well, see, although,
actually,
and this is crazy. The first John Malkovich film I saw was being John Malkovich. I'm like, okay. And now I've seen Jonah Hick, so I'm like, I really got to see his better work. I realize I'm kind of on the bottom end of the Malkovich totem pole.
Well, I hate him. So, but anyway, I guess now I have to watch it because John Cusack. But anyway, in 2012, apparently, you know, like the Mayans predict that in December 2012 that the world is going to end. So, apparently, a scientist in India was like, "Oh yeah, I realize." You know, he did his research and he was like, "Yep, world's going to end 2012." Because the planets are going to align and the neutrinos from a solar flare are going to cause the Earth's temperature to rise and there'll be a cataclysmic event and it'll wipe out all of humanity. So, you know, they alert the government officials and the government officials go, well, what can we do? You know, how can we deal with this cataclysmic event that is coming? Okay, so you take all the rich people, the billionaires, and you have them contribute to this project where basically all the rich people will be saved and all the rest of the schlubs of the world will die in the cataclysmic event. The end. That's the story.
So Eve, let me ask you something.
Yeah.
If there's an RV falling down a hole and you're in it, Are you able to climb up the RV?
Yes.
And then somehow magically grab onto the edge of the cliff? I think
as the earth is opening up underneath you?
But all of a sudden, the earth that you're grabbing onto doesn't fall. Everything else
right.
was.
Oh, let's not talk about. Even before that, let's talk about the drive through LA while it's being destroyed and hell. I don't know.
Right, you know why? Because
he's maneuvering perfectly.
Yeah. Well, listen. You know, LA. There's no traffic in LA. So you know, if something like this happens, your limousine can easily just maneuver through the streets, like as buildings are falling and such, because there won't be anything to impede you because there's no cars on the road in LA. So don't worry about it, Seabear. Don't worry. Yeah.
And then let's talk about when the guy, you know, the other guy who was dating John Cusack's wife. Now he's able to fly through all the wreckage and tall buildings falling in L.A. and, you know, I guess escaping unscathed. But you know what? This being of the disaster porn genre and me having lower expectations, I was able to use my willful suspension of disbelief and get through all that.
No. Listen, see, Barry. They're okay. You know, you expect it, like you said, you expect in these films, you have to suspend the disbelief. Okay, fine. You know, I am the queen of suspending disbelief, okay? This is just ridiculous. It's so, so utterly, utterly ridiculous. At the end of the film.
I agree. Like I'm saying, after the first hour, I was like, okay, this is just
dumb. That's the thing. It just keeps going. It just keeps going. There's not one believable moment in the film, okay? And then, like, basically, at this point, at the end, I look to my husband and I go, all right, tell me, let me guess. The moon is going to land on the earth in the end, right? Is that what's going to happen? There's the moon! You know, and the moon is coming at them. It's coming closer! Okay, is that what the end of the movie was going to be? Like, first of all, like I said, all the rich, powerful people in the world get to live. Why the fuck do I care if they live or not? Like, why do I care? Well, I want them to sink first, okay? I want them to go down first, all right?
But that's kind of realistic to me, though. Like, I really think the rich people would devise a plan. Like, sorry, suckers.
I agree. You know, but it's a movie where I really had hoped in the end that every single person died. Like every single person on Earth died. That's what I wanted it to be.
I think what
Steve is Sandy Newton.
Especially her. Okay.
You do not hate on my Sandy.
She could go sit with John Malkovich, okay? For all I care.
What you got against Sandy Newton? Sandy Newton's sweet and kind.
I don't love her.
Now, I think what Seabury is trying to point out is that he enjoyed it on the Arnold Schwarzenegger, get on the chopper level. You know what I mean? Like that.
For the first L.
Yeah. And there's a point.
But they went to, I thought they were going to go to all, like, every city. Like, they went to L.A., and then it was destroyed. And then they went to Las Vegas. That's destroyed. They go to Yellowstone Natural Park. That's destroyed. Like, everywhere they went, it was, like, destroying out from under them. And they were like, we have to escape the destruction, you know? And it just was so beyond ludicrous. Beyond ludicrous, it was. And you know, the thing is that it was John Cusack, his children, his ex-wife, and the ex-wife's boyfriend. Did you give a shit about any of them? Because I certainly didn't. I could care less if they made it because there was no character development.
I cared about one person.
Who?
Woody Harrelson.
You know what? Right. It's like.
Hey, I cared because I like John Cusack.
I like him too. I like him too. But what did you do?
And I like Tandy Newton, you Tandy hater.
It's no Norbert Seabury.
What did you know about John Cusack's character that you would be like, yeah, I'm really pulling for this guy? You don't know anything. And the ex-wife, man, I hate Amanda Peet. Oh my goodness. I can't stand her. When I saw she was the ex-wife, I just knew what was going to happen. I'm like, oh, they're going to fall back in love, and the Zans will bring them together, and blah, blah. And I'm like, I hate them. Let them all fall into the burning earth and tidal waves and F them and goodbye. I could not
Okay, I'm not a big fan of Amanda Peet. But also she was there edging for was in
May
the film, right?
Saving Silverman.
That's a good movie, but you know, you hate her in the movie, but you're supposed to, so.
Hey, I cared about you until Eddie for because he's awesome.
I hated this movie. Okay. Freaking can't say, I mean, I really can't say it enough. And I love this kind of bullshit movie. I love, like, the fantastical where you're like, that could never happen, you know. But this is just, it's just beyond ridiculous. It's just, the boat won't move unless the door is closed. Really? Really, the engine won't start unless the door is closed on this massive ark that they built to save everybody's life, okay? Oh, wait, there's Mount Everest! Mount Everest is coming! Ah! And did you know gigantic, massive arcs, you know, they can just, like, make a really quick, sharp turn, you know, in the middle of a tsunami. Don't worry about it. They get to, turn the engine on? Yep, make the turn right away. Don't worry about it. The stupidest movie ever.
Now, yes. here's my question. What did you think of the graphics?
I think they look good at times. Like, at times they you know, the disaster portions of it themselves look really good. But I thought that some of the scenes where people are running from a disaster, it looked like people were running from, like, a screen. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it looked a little off. Sometimes, but I mean, that's the thing. The movie annoyed me so much that I couldn't be impressed. And, you know, the reason why I'd never seen this film before is because, you know, I usually don't like films where, like, I usually don't like to watch films where, let's say, New York gets destroyed because that's where I live. So I'm like, no, I don't need those kind of images where, you know, you see, like, New York being destroyed. And so in this one, I was like, oh, you see, like, everything being destroyed. So I was like, I don't know, you know. I mean, I'm, like, prone to nightmares, you know, for things like that. So I didn't watch it. And then my husband was like, listen, don't worry. You won't have any nightmares because, you know, you won't believe any of it. So don't worry. So I watched it, and I still was like, oh, well, I hope I don't have nightmares from those scenes. Like, Jen, you mentioned, you know, the scenes where it looks like that is actually, like, disaster is actually happening. And then I went to sleep, and I think, you know, like, I didn't have any nightmares. I dreamt that, like, my, you know, friend from elementary school, like, his first grade version of himself came to meet me to watch a movie. Like, that's what I dreamt about last night. Like, I didn't have any, you know, like, I didn't have any, like, 9/11 flashback dreams. I didn't have any dreams about the Earth, you know, like, or the moon landing on the Earth. Nothing. And it didn't impress me in any way. Like, it didn't even impress me to the point where I was like, oh my God, you know, like, that could happen, and oh, what will we do, you know? So.
Yeah.
Who would you guys think?
Justin?
I could not finish the movie. I watched it about, I don't know, 20,
wow,
30 minutes into it, and then I think I just fast-forwarded, and I saw everything in double time, and then I was like, all right, time for the next movie. I couldn't get through it. It was,
Hutch said the same thing on Twitter, right? He tweeted that he fell asleep in the middle of it.
Let's say he probably pulled a Mr. Vector.
Yeah!
Yeah, wow. I went to a little, like, discount movie theater, started. Like I said, being a QZX fan, I was able to suspend disbelief for, like, the first hour. I'm like, you know, he's really navigating that car rather well through a totally destroyed Los Angeles. I'm like, but that's okay. And then the other guy slams. I'm like, but you know what? That's okay. Like I said, after about that first hour, I was like, what the hell, dude? Like, what is this? And like I said, I don't know. I mean, it probably wasn't great character development, but I just like John Cusack. I love Tandy Newton. And I like Timothy Edgeford. So I was like, you guys live. Yay!
Well,
what about your boy, Danny Glover?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Man.
Went down the ship, Danny Glover.
Yeah, I mean, I like Danny, but you know.
I think they forgot to tell him he wasn't in Predator 2. That's what all I could think about when I was watching it.
Yeah, right? He was acting the Predator 2 part, definitely.
But he doesn't know. He's too old for this stuff.
Yeah. Well,
I think most of America agrees with you, Eve, because it's only got a 39% on Rotten Tomatoes.
But it made a lot of money. It made a lot of money at the box office. Like, people went to go see this movie.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised by that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, are you guys fans of Roland Emmerich, the director?
No.
I was until the day after tomorrow. I was like, what is this crap? And then it was PG-13, so you can't even get, like, really good, gritty deals. It'd be falling and you see blood splatter. It's like, no, Dagum, if it's a disaster, I want to see somebody impaled.
See, I liked The Day After Tomorrow, and 10,000 PC looked good, but I wasn't really interested by it.
I don't know how I feel about The Patriot.
Yeah.
The Patriot, Godzilla, Independence Day.
The only one that I enjoyed was Independence Day.
Yeah, me too.
And
yeah,
I haven't seen Independence Day since 96, so I don't know. Maybe I won't like it.
We should do a rewatch of Independence Day because I like
Universal Soldier.
Oh, wait. Never mind. Let me change that. Universal Soldier is my favorite.
Yeah, there you go. Universal Soldier.
Looking awesome. Wow. He's done a lot. I didn't realize he did so much.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's pretty much done, though, as far as the after movie, don't you think? Don't you think this was it?
I think 2012,
After We Die, he's got Fantastic Voyage.
Yay.
No, I meant as far as destroying things.
No, I don't think he's done. He's going to destroy us again.
Look, he's got Godzilla, The Day After Tomorrow. 10,000 BC wasn't exactly destroying, but... 2012 is another one. I mean, he's got a ton of them under his belt.
Oh, no, because they keep making crap loads of money. Trust me, Emmerich going to find a way to blow up something else.
You know what I wanted? I wanted it to be like, you know, instead of them being like, oh, our plan was boats, I wanted it to be like, oh, you know, I wanted it to be spaceships. And it's like, yeah, we have this colony on Mars that we got ready, and that's where we're all going. And then they go to Mars, and they have to fight Martians, and, you know. I wanted it to be, like, really over the... Like, if it's going to be ridiculous, I wanted it to be, like, really ridiculous. Like, really over the top. But it wasn't. You know, it was just like... After a while, I felt like I was watching the second half of Titanic.
Yeah.
You know? That's how it felt after a while. And, you know, I like at the end, like, well... Should I spoiler warn? Because I feel like we've spoiled the whole movie as it is, but as if this movie could be spoiled, you know? But, spoiler, in the end... After something like 27 days of the people that survive on the Ark, they're like, oh, we found out that, you know, there is landmass because somehow during this whole thing, the Earth, like, it tilted and it elevated Africa. So the whole continent of Africa survived. Like, didn't it make it seem like the people in Africa weren't even affected by what happened because their landmass elevated or something like that? And I'm like, okay, so they're like, yay, land, they're so happy, right? And then, like, you see them getting off the boat and, like, you see, like, oh, look, Africa survived. And I'm thinking, like, what happens when they get off the boat? Do Somali pirates, like, hijack the Ark? Or, like, you know, Ugandan factions come out with their machine guns and, like, shoot them all? Or what? What do you think? Like, and Africa didn't have food, like, you know, that's like, you know, like, there's famine all over Africa, so, like, you know, why are they so happy? Like, yay, Africa survived. It's like, oh, yeah, the one place with, like, no food, no...
Hey!
And, you know what I mean?
Like, so hard on Africa now?
I'm saying, like, what, you know what I mean? Like, of all places, they're like, yay, Africa survived, we have a place to go, and I'm thinking, like, you know... You know what I'm saying? Like, that's not really the most ideal place to go, don't you think? Like, where are they getting their food from? You know?
Oh, Africa ain't in famine. It's some fertile parts.
Okay, but, you
know South Africa's still around. South Africa got the little fancy, you know. Buildings and resorts, Sun City.
Yeah, but South Africa is all the way at the bottom. Like, I find it hard to believe that the people, like, the areas that were surrounded by water are unaffected.
Steve, you're using faulty logic. Half the people, more than half the people, are rich people. Even if there is food for them to get, they wouldn't be able to get it themselves. So they're all going to die anyways.
Well, they made it seem like, I mean, I thought they would pack those arcs with a lot of food and you know, right? Like, I don't know what the hell they would think.
Like I said, all the rich people are going to die.
Screw them. They should have just all died anyway. Okay?
John Cusack.
Hey, I'm going to keep it real. I'm going to say the obvious. Who's got two thumbs that was happy that Africa survived? This guy. I was like, yeah, Africa. I'm sorry.
Okay. I'm not against Africa surviving. I'm not against it. I'm just saying that, you know, it probably wasn't the most ideal place that could have survived because of, you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, like, I know. It's some not so, I guess, hospitable or not so easily inhabitable areas of Africa.
I think the parts that are built up, like you said, like the rich areas and things like that, were probably destroyed because if the whole entire continent moved, you know what I mean? Like, it's still going to cause problems, right?
Yeah, I guess you're right.
So, I don't know what the hell they were thinking. What did it? Yay, land! It's like, so what? You know, like, you're going to have to live like cavemen anyway, so... Whatever. The hell with this movie, man. The hell with it.
It doesn't matter. We'll all be dead in a couple years anyways. And the movie told us, so we won't have to remember this movie.
Oh, wait. Can I tell you another thing? You like the way they were all pissed off because I forget the guy's name. He was off by like an hour. Remember? They were like, you said we had 2 hours. Now we only have an hour or something like that. And it's like he pinpointed the day. Isn't that enough? You know what I'm saying? Like, he said the day that the cataclysm would begin, and you're pissed off because it's like, you said it was 2 hours from now, and now it's only an hour. And it's like, yeah, okay. All right. Yeah. Be mad.
Well, I mean, 2 and 1 is kind of a gap when you're trying to, you know, save your life.
He's a scientist. He's not a psychic. You know, he, like, did the best he could. I mean, give the guy a break. He was the only person that figured it out, too. None of those other geniuses figured it out.
All right, so Avatar, Justin's favorite movie.
Woo!
Tell us about it.
Yeah. Originally released in December of 2009, Avatar is an epic science fiction film written and directed by James Cameron, starring Sam Worthington, Zoe Saldana, Sigourney Weaver, Stephen Lang, and a bunch of other people, including Michelle Rodriguez. The film is set in 2154, where humans are mining a precious mineral called unobtainium on Pandora, a lush moon of a gas giant in the Alpha Centauri star system. The expansion of the mining colony threatens the continued existence of a local tribe of Na'vi, a humanoid species indigenous to Pandora.
Like I said, man, seeing this, I really like the way they use 3D. To me, it kind of immerses you when all that cheesy. Hey, you want some toast? And they stick it in the screen, and it comes out at you.
That's what Eve loves.
So, I love that.
that get on my nerves, man. That's cheesy. You know, I like the way Avatar did it. You know, I feel immersed, and I kind of just like the world of the film. And I mean, it was just an interesting journey. I mean, yeah. Some people said they liked it better when it was Pocahontas.
And Fern Gully.
Yeah. Or Fern Gully. And I understand those complaints. Those are valid complaints. No, you know, I don't think, you know, James Cameron or whoever gets like any writing awards. But, you know, I thought it was cool. Thought it was a nice little story. I know a lot of my friends are like, yeah, this story talking about the evil corporations and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, well, corporations are kind of evil. Hey. You know what I'm saying? There are a lot of, I guess, finger pointing and implications, but I like that was a nice little story, like the whole I see you thing, and, you know, like the blue alien love, I guess.
Well, the thing about, well, we've already, I think me and Justin and Eve have all expressed our thoughts on 3D. So me and Justin like both kinds as long as they're used correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Like the jokey 3D, they need to know that they're doing it and they're doing it on purpose. And then the immersive is kind of just as long as it's not up converted crappily, then we're good with that too. Mm-hmm. But I think the thing with the story that bugged me when everybody came out and decided that they were going to complain about it. Is the fact that they point this out about Avatar, but when you really think about it, there's only so many stories that can be told that are not copies of other things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you've got the basic premises that you're going to use in any movie. The coming of age story, the exploration stories, you know. I mean, you didn't hear a whole bunch of people coming out about how Battle for Terror, how dare they copy Pocahontas and Fern, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like Battle for Terror, that was another one that was like an exploration story. You didn't see people going and saying, well, you know, I think even I would say to an extent WALL-E was based on a lot of older stories as well. Mm-hmm. The exploration of a new worlds and then coming home, you know what I mean? Like, not every story is completely and totally original, and there's things that you'll see that are based on other things, you know, or have some sort of inspiration from other movies and films and stories and things like that. But they're not reamed on so hard, you know, because of it. I think this one was because it was the popular thing to do. Once somebody was like, oh, this is crappy, everybody thought, oh, well, that's cool. Let's all call it crappy because everybody loves it so much, you know? And
yeah, that's that backlash that comes with anything that's popular. A lot of people, oh, this was the highest grossing movie of all time. All right, I hate it.
Yeah, exactly. Let's tear it down.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, when I went to see the movie originally, when it first came out, I mean, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the experience, the whole theater, the 3D, whatever, everything. I enjoyed it. But, you know, I can't say that I was in love with it. I can't say that I was like, yeah, this is one of my favorite movies ever. And, you know, I mean, everyone was saying how the script, like the dialogue wasn't really that great. And I have to agree, like, I didn't think the dialogue was really that great. And I thought the first half of the film where you're at the military complex and the lab and you're learning who these people are and Jake Sully is still, you know, like a jerk. I found that really boring. Like, I was not into it. And even when I rewatched it this weekend, I still was like, yep, I'm still completely bored. And I actually was like starting to fall asleep until like the action started and there was the whole Jake learns the Na'vi ways. And then it got interesting. And, you know, as far as evil corporations, you know, let's face it, there's nothing really out of the ordinary about the message going on here that, you know, when people with money and corporations and, you know, governments or what have you, if you're sitting on something they want, they pretty much go and they take it. It doesn't matter what they destroy. And, you know, America, hello, you know, like America's built on that premise. So that's really not so out of the ordinary or, you know, oh, it's not like, oh, it's, I heard people say, oh, it's anti-American, you know, and it's like, yeah, no, it's just reality, you know.
The thing is, though, is that I agree with you. I think that it's not the most original story or the best story I ever told or anything like that. But I also, like, my whole point before was that I don't think it deserves to be smashed as much as
no,
it is.
No, and I yeah. think it's, I mean, I don't think, yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I don't think, you know, every film that comes out has to be groundbreaking and original,
yeah,
and
yeah.
you know, but I do. I mean, I love Sigourney Weaver. Hello,
I like her too.
Yeah, you know, I love her. I think we all love her, and we'll much watch whatever she does, right? But I don't know, just the whole setup. I just wasn't interested. Like, I just didn't care at first. I almost didn't really care what was going to happen as I was watching the beginning of the film. I don't know. And like I said, I think it picks up later on. So I feel like the film probably could have been shorter and it might have been better that way. But still a good movie. And if they do the sequels, it should definitely all be on Pandora.
And it should all be controlled by James Cameron.
Oh yeah, the sequels. Yeah,
there's no that. That's what I'm afraid of. That's my main gripe with everything is that I don't want it to turn into a franchise where he doesn't have the control to say no. You can't make a movie without me.
Mm-hmm.
And then they decide, oh well, he doesn't want to do Avatar 4, so we're gonna give it to such and such because they can do it. You know, and then we get a Terminator 3.
They're probably doing an M. Night Shyamalan.
Yay!
I know, and then there'll be a twist. the whole time, the Navis were actually humans that just had moved. That's all the twist.
I know.
So, actually, Justin, you got to go this weekend to see the re-release, which had 8 minutes of extra footage. So, mm-hmm. why don't you tell us how that experience was?
Well, I originally liked... I actually saw the film twice when it was originally released, and...
Me too.
I went back to see it in the re-release because of the new footage and because I wanted to experience it, like we talked about earlier in the show, on an IMAX screen and in 3D, because I can't have that experience at home, even though the Blu-ray looks great. And my parents, I didn't buy the Blu-ray for myself, but my parents did because they just wanted to see the movie. And so I got a chance to look at it, look at the Blu-ray when my parents were here earlier this year. And the Blu-ray looks great, but it's not what you would get from an IMAX experience or even just a regular big screen experience with 3D.
Well, and then even when they release the 3D version on Blu-ray or whatever, that's not on a TV. It's not going to be the same. Mm-hmm.
It's still the 3D technology is still, it's just not there at this point. So I really wanted to go see it again in the theater. And the extra footage, it's not anything that adds to the plot or anything. And it's not, actually, Eve, you might like it because it's not any humans sitting around. You know what? We need to get some of this unobtainium. We need to go do this.
Good.
It's all pretty much all action, and everything is on Pandora, adding to the world, adding to the action scenes. You get to see more of the creatures. So it's, if you liked the original time you went to Pandora and you liked all the creatures in the world, then you'll probably like the new footage. But I wouldn't say it's worth going out to see it if you were just okay with Avatar. It's not going to change your mind if you didn't like Avatar, or if you just thought Avatar was okay. It's not going to say, it's not going to make you say, okay, now it's a great movie. I think this additional footage is really for the people who loved Avatar and the people who were, there was reports that came out when the original, when it was originally theatrically released, people were having depression because they couldn't live on Pandora, and they wanted to go back to that world so badly. I think it's for people like that who really love the film. It's just giving you more of what you love, but it's not essential to the plot. It's not a George Lucas type revision where you're adding whole new scenes that change the perspective and change the story. It's just kind of a fun thing. So I enjoyed myself going back to the theater because I originally enjoyed it quite a bit when I saw it in the theater. So I enjoyed the additional footage that was shown.
Well, I mean, I guess it could have been a little shorter, and, you know.
You know, the running time didn't really bother me the first time because I was immersed in the story, and it didn't really bother me this time either. With 9 additional minutes, it's even longer than what you see on DVD and what you saw originally in the theaters. The time doesn't bother me. It was the same thing with Inception. Like, because I was really into the world and into the movie, I didn't notice the time, but then when you get out of the movie, you're like, oh man, 3.5 hours have passed since I started this. So to me, the time doesn't really bother me that much, but the same thing that Jen said, I don't think that the story is anything original, the dialogue's not anything great, but the thing that makes Avatar a great movie to me is the experience of it and seeing
the
things,
music,
yeah,
the visuals.
I really, the music is really
good. I do really like the score, and I ended up getting the score because I really liked it. And
I think it's the actual world itself. What's the planet called again?
Pandora.
Yeah. The world of Pandora, the way that they present that world, the way James Cameron presents that world is nothing else. And the actual being like in that place, like even if you don't like the characters, even if you don't like what's going on, like you have to admit seeing it and hearing it and being almost there, like is not like nothing else in the world. And so for that alone, I think that makes this movie a great movie.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely better than The Hurt Locker. But
No, sir. I cannot get behind this statement at all.
Seabury, are you a Bigelow fan?
Huh?
You a Bigelow fan?
Yeah, man. Hurt Locker rock, dude. Hurt Locker.
It was all right. It was all right.
Yeah. I'm a Deuce Bigelow fan myself. But yeah, I enjoy Hurt Locker as well. But I was hoping Avatar would win Best Picture over Hurt Locker. I think there was a lot of behind the scenes stuff going on, political stuff.
I think we've already expressed that a lot of times it's the theme of the movie and the politics of things that make a movie win, not the fact that it's a good movie.
Yeah, but the score, I forgot to mention, the composer is James Horner, if anybody's wondering. Mm-hmm. So what did you guys think about the performances? See, the thing about Avatar for me, James Cameron came out and said it was a game changer before, you know, when it was originally released, and this is going to change filmmaking. And I think there was a lot of backlash about that statement because a lot of people were like, oh, this isn't, my life isn't changed when I came out of it. But I think they went into it with their expectations like, okay, this movie is going to change.
I think they were thinking that he meant like the story. And I think he meant the way things are filmed and the technology that is there now and the ability to do what he did with Avatar, with that experience, that immersive experience.
Yeah.
And when they didn't get something that blew their mind away for the story, they kind of, they're like, that's not, you know, and a lot of people don't, like, they don't look that far into the way something looks or, you know, if there's something like when you're talking about 2012 earlier, and you said it looks like someone's running from a screen, sometimes people just don't even notice that stuff. And that's why Hollywood can get away with that kind of green screening. Right. You know what I mean? And those are the type of people that were like, well, this didn't change anything, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the thing that I think is the main aspect of this story.
Yeah. For me, my number one thing about Avatar and the reason why I like it so much, as I said, is the experience of it. And not so much the 3D, because like we said before, it's that immersive type 3D where after a while I forgot I was watching it in 3D because at the beginning my eyes were kind of a little bit wonky, but as I adjusted to it,
I was wrong. I actually watched it 3 times.
Oh, you saw it in 2D?
I watched it in 2D, and I totally forgot that I watched it in 2D. And in 2D, it still works. The visuals are still beautiful, I think.
Yeah,
and
I saw it
the score. And I think it's a great movie, 3D or not, but I think 3D just adds an extra layer. And I think that's the thing that I liked about the 3D is that, as with we saw earlier, I think that same year earlier we saw Up, it kind of did the same thing you were immersed into the world instead of something flying out at your face.
Yeah, we saw that with Toy Story 3 this year too. And my thoughts on 3D, I'm kind of with James Cameron. He's come out and said that he thinks that 3D is going to be like color for film, where at some point they're going to stop putting 3D on the title of the movie. It's just going to be, okay, this is Avatar, and it's in 3D, just like you don't say, okay, this movie's in color. Like, it's just going to be another part of the film, and eventually we're going to get to that point where maybe we don't even need 3D glasses. They're already starting to come out, or they're talking about TVs.
Nintendo 3DS.
Well, yeah, the 3DS. And they're talking about TVs where you don't need 3D glasses. So I think it's just going to become a part of the technology. And a lot of people are like, oh, 3D is a gimmick. It's a fad, much like it was in the 50s and the 80s. But I think it's different today.
I think with the movies, I think it's definitely going to continue to be there's going to be always be that option from now on. I think there's going to be the option of 2D or 3D. Because some people just can't see it and they're wasting their money on a fuzzy movie. But I think as long as people stop doing that whole step up 3D, you know, like kind of thing, which that was good 3D, but I'm just saying, like, when you put that in the title, you know, like Jackass 3D.
Yeah, those are all gimmicks. That, yeah, just like with Piranha 3D, the same way. It's a gimmick.
See, man, is like, man, I don't know, man, like, right now, since it's not on everything, I'm like, you know, I just want to be done. Like, I don't want to see Woody Allen movies in 3D.
It's not on everything because not everybody has purchased the actual equipment. Mm-hmm.
I feel like they need to change the name of it, don't you think? Because at this point, it has
a stigma associated with it.
Yeah, and it's like they should call it something else because, like you said,
they don't need to call it anything else. All they needed to do is change, like, get everyone's mindset to the movie you go see, unless you say 2D, is going to be 3D. is what they need to do.
No, but so, I like, mean, like, is it,
you want to go see
kind of 3D though? There's the gimmicky 3D, and then there's the immersive 3D. So if everything is going to go the way of immersive 3D, then they need to change the name of that.
But through previews, you'll be able to.
It's like high definition, really. It's just higher definition.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think the best thing for them to do is, and what I'm trying to say is that, like, just instead of saying 3D, like, you know, this is 3D, it just, you see the movie, you know, automatically know it's going to be 3D. And then if you want to see it in 2D, you ask for 2D.
Yeah.
And that way you don't even have to say, you know, is this 3D or not? Because you already automatically know that it's going to be 3D. And you'll be able to tell which ones are going to be gimmicky 3D and whatever else when you're watching the 3D movie before it and you see it in the previews.
See, I don't, my just personal belief, I don't think there will be gimmicky 3D anymore. I think everything is just going to be like we're talking about the immersive.
I think there'll always be gimmicky 3D. I think it'll just be more
maybe
of
kids
a
movies.
I think it'll be more of a rarity. I think it'll be like, you know,
like
there'll be that
Piranha.
One movie that comes out that is like purposely doing that just to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it won't be as prevalent as it is right now because mm-hmm. we have that so much right now.
See, I could see a young Seabury back in the 1800s saying, "I don't want my movies with sound. Give me the good old silent."
No. I said, until it becomes the norm, just, you know, like, I don't know, man. If you're being selective because it's not the norm, you know, just be a little more selective right now until it becomes the norm. Like, you know, I don't really want to see, like,
let me just say, if there was a Seabury Experience movie, it would need to be in 3D.
Man, how many pounds 3D air do you? I don't know. That's gonna make me have to work out. People be like, "Oh God, I saw all this stretch watching 3D." Like,
yeah. See, and for me, the thing about 3D is the same thing with high definition. I know Eve feels differently that not everything needs to be in high definition, but for me, 3D is the same thing as high definition. I think it's just closer to what you see with your eye when you're experiencing real life. So. We see things in three dimensions, and we see things in a high, you know, the highest definition possible. So that's the way the filmmaking, I think, is just going to get to a point where you're looking at a movie, but it's almost like you're looking through a window pane, and you're just seeing, you know, you're transported to another world, and you're just experiencing it more like what you would experience with your eye. So that's where I think things are going technology-wise. But going back to Avatar, the thing that I enjoyed the most was not the 3D. It wasn't the story. It wasn't the dialogue. It was the motion capture technology with Zoe Saldana and all of the Na'vi. It was amazing to me. And Sigourney Weaver's character was that.
I was going
to
say Sigourney Weaver and what's the main guy's name?
Sam Worthington.
Sam Worthington.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Sam Worthington. I think those were more impressive than Zoe Saldana because you got to see their human and then you got to see their motion capture and you got to see that the difference between the two wasn't very much. Like the way that their facial expressions worked both ways. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was my favorite parts.
My favorite. I enjoyed Sigourney Weaver because her character looked like her. And,
like so much like her mm-hmm. too. Like,
and I thought that Zoe Saldana's, it didn't necessarily look like her, but I could see her mannerisms, like the way she smiled or the way she got angry. Like, I could see her performance underneath the CG. So that was what I loved about the movie, was that motion capture technology, and to the point where they could go in close up on the face and you would see the pores in her skin, or you would see all of... It was really fascinating to me watching it. All of the different muscles you think about in your face that make up, you know, when you have to smile or when you have to frown or whenever you do a facial expression, and it captured that. In the movie, I could see the muscles in her face moving, and I could see her performance, and that just...
I could be wrong. I believe they actually say that there's you use 1,000 muscles to smile.
Yeah, something like that. And so that's what I loved about the movie, and particularly Zoe Saldana, where I kind of fell in love with her character just because of her performance. And I almost felt like she should have won a digital performance Oscar or something, you know, something that's not, doesn't exist today.
Right.
A motion capture Oscar. Cause I just loved her performance.
Yeah, Zoe Saldana made blue chicks hot.
I just really loved her performance. And Sigourney Weaver,
though, too. I liked her performance, too, a lot. And it actually made me want to see what the performance would have been like without motion capture. Like, that's what I find. I find myself saying, like, oh, I would have loved to see a performance like this from her where it's actually her and not motion capture.
Yeah, but see, there's a, and this is another conversation for another time that we can probably get into more depth with, but there's a line where it's like, who gets, I mean, with that performance, who gets the recognition? Because it's, I think it's a combination of the people that animate / whatever CG, whatever it's called, you know, and the person's performance, because they work about, actually, I would say the person that animates does more work, but I think they should be equally recognized, mm-hmm. because at this point it's just as much performance from the person as it is the animation, yeah. of the actual thing.
And they got some recognition, like their 9 Oscar nominations. I think most of them were technical.
Yeah.
So that was really interesting. And I saw some of the behind the scenes features that they had. It wasn't on the DVD as we talked about, or the Blu-ray, but I saw her with the little dots on her face, and they had a new camera system that James Cameron invented, and he developed that 3D camera system as well. So that's the technical aspects of the movie are far more fascinating for me than the actual story of the film, which a lot of people got caught up in, and a lot of people who hate the film get caught up in that. But the aspects of it where they invented a language for this movie, they invented a 3D camera system for the movie, they invented a new type of motion capture where there's a camera like right in front of the person's face, that all of those things combine to make it a brilliant technical achievement for me. And that's what I enjoyed about the movie the most.
And when you think about it, that's the movie version of writing an entire world of the Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. or Harry Potter, where they thought about every single aspect they could think mm-hmm. about. That's the same thing that James Cameron did.
Yeah. And also I think people get caught up in the aspect of originality versus entertaining, because okay, let's just say we can all admit that it wasn't the most original script or idea, but at the same time, it was entertaining to me. I wasn't bored. Well, like you said, Eve, besides the human parts, I was kind of bored with, especially on my third rewatch of it. The human aspects of it, I was not as enamored with as the Pandora part of it and the world of that. But the thing for me is always about, is it entertaining?
Look at Toy Story 3.
Mm-hmm.
It's the third movie, and the story is the same.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff.
Adventure to get home. Mm-hmm. But did it entertain you?
Yeah, and that's the number one thing for me. Avatar was a completely entertaining way to tell that same story over and over again. And just my experience in general, like I said, not watching it on DVD or Blu-ray, I'm not going to get the exact same experience that I got in the theater, where I'm finding this more and more, actually, not even with just 3D movies, but any movie in general. When I watch it at home, I have so many distractions. I've got the internet here. I've got Twitter popping up. I've got, you know, people calling me on the phone, all of these different things, where a lot of times a 2-hour movie will take me 4 hours to watch because I keep pausing the movie and going and doing other things just because I've got all of these different distractions. Whereas in the theater, I turn my phone off. Nobody can reach me. That 2 hours, you know, goes by pretty fast. I'm totally immersed in the movie. It's dark. There's no windows open. There's no people coming in. So that's another thing about just the overall general experience of Avatar. I liked being totally focused on that world in the theater, but that was just my personal experience. And going back to Pandora again was something that I really enjoyed. Now, I don't know if I would necessarily like to see sequels for Avatar. We already know they're in development right now for 2 and 3, but the way that it ended, I was pretty satisfied with how the film ends, especially that last shot of him opening his eyes. Spoiler alert, if you haven't seen Avatar, Jake Sully, when he becomes the Avatar, when he becomes the Na'vi and he opens his eyes, that's the last shot of the movie. It's almost like a reverse Lost, Jen,
yeah.
where he closes his eyes. But that was a great last shot for me. And then the score comes in. So,
but see, I think I wouldn't want to see too much about what with those same characters. I think if he's taught, if I don't know, what I have heard a couple times is that he wanted to do other planets and kind of things, like different kind of creatures and stuff like that. I think that would be more interesting to me than it would be to go back and see the same characters again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know
if he's brave enough to do that, because I think the studio is going to be like, no, we have to show what happens to the, you know.
Yeah, and I don't even know what story would be interesting to me after he's already become part of their culture.
I'm not worried about the story. I'm more worried about, like, seeing something new. Because if we see, how many times can you see Pandora again? You know what I mean?
Well, I think
you said already
a lot.
The third time you started to notice things that you don't like as much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but we also know that people were crying and upset and depressed because they couldn't go back to Pandora. So don't you think?
Well, I'm sure
people,
there's,
you know, like I mean, they went through the trouble to create this whole world with language and botany and mm-hmm. all that. And I think that it makes
sense.
Don't
you think that those people would still be interested in other aspects of that universe, you know what I mean? Like that if they saw different kinds of creatures and different
species. Yeah, but I mean, why can't you bring back
humanoids?
The same characters, though?
People
like those characters. Why wouldn't you bring them back?
I don't think we've discussed this on the podcast. Jen knows my thoughts on origin stories. I find origin films much more interesting than sequels where they go back and they do something over and over again with the same characters. I find the first time you're introduced to these characters, you're introduced to a new world, a lot more interesting than I do sequels. So that's another thing about Avatar. I'm happy with the story that they told. And I really, if I didn't see these characters again in a new story, it wouldn't make me sad.
I'd actually prefer to see different creatures and different, like a different.
Yeah, but no. The difference between bringing back Zoe Saldana and Sam Worthington,
we're going to
go, like, the planet is gigantic. You saw when they were having the battle, they called in all those other tribes mm-hmm. and other creatures came, right? So obviously the planet is big. They can take those people and explore the rest of the planet. I mean, it has nothing to do with, like, I mean, I think, of course, they're going to add new creatures and such like that. Just like, you know, George Lucas did with Star Wars.
But I'd prefer seeing just that and not seeing those two characters again.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's not going to happen.
Yeah, but that's kind of the... Yeah, yeah, because you know that's a bread and butter, man.
You know, another thing that I found interesting is kind of the themes that the movie has of kind of man versus machine, which we've seen many times in James Cameron's previous films with Terminator, even Titanic to an extent. You can say The Boat was a machine, The Abyss, True Lies, and a lot of different movies that he's done. And you always see how technology is evil. And technology, it's like man has to overcome technology, pretty much. But I was listening to, this is going way back when the movie was originally released, Dave Chen from the Slash Filmcast, he did an interview with James Cameron, and he asked him about, you know, don't you find it ironic that the movies that you have say that technology is evil, but you're using technology to tell the stories. Like, you're using very advanced 3D camera systems and different CGI things. You're using technology in these stories saying that technology is evil. And James Cameron's response was he didn't feel it that necessarily hindered anything. It was just, that's just a storytelling tool, and he's using tools to tell these stories. So I thought that was an interesting thing. Now, Seabury... go ahead.
Man, it's contradictory, dude. Because on one hand, he's like, ooh, technology, man. Well, then he just made 3D cameras to tell a story about his, you know, funky blue aliens.
Yeah. I could see that. But, Seabury, another thing that came out, big controversy when the movie first came out was the racist themes, or what was perceived as racism in certain audiences, where the movie is the story of a white man's guilt. Like, you have the white man coming in, and he's going into a tribe, a native tribe, and then he sees the errors of his ways after he's lived with the people of the land. And it's actually, a lot of people compare it to Dances with Wolves, which is kind of a similar story where Kevin Costner comes in. Actually, and you can also say it with The Last Samurai, where Tom Cruise, he's the white man, he comes in, and then he's like the greatest samurai, and he's the best. So that's the same thing with Jake Sully. You know, he comes in and then he's chosen to ride the giant dragon, Taruk Makto, whatever. He's like the best guy. Like, he's an outsider. He's not a part of their people, but then he comes in and he's like the best one out of all of them. So did you see that? Did you pick up on those themes when you originally watched the movie?
Man, that's one of the first things I was saying to like a lot of, I guess, my African-American friends. You know, the scrap Elsa, I said, now, it is a lot of white man guilt that I think James Cameron is working through. Because I think James Cameron suffers from white man guilt. Like, even though I don't think he stole anybody's land, I think he, I guess, feels bad about that stuff or whatever, or the injustice committed by the Anglo-Saxons. But, you know, like, yeah, I picked up on a lot of that. And I mean, and I guess my approach has been, well, I'd rather have white guilt than white hatred. So, you know, I was like, you work through your guilt trips, Jimmy.
Do you think he's doing it consciously or subconsciously? Like, if you feel that that's
conscious.
More conscious?
Yeah, I think it's conscious because, like, although it's kind of silly to me because I'm like, well, Mr. Cameron, have you directly stolen anybody's land? Or, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like, you know what I'm saying? But I think he feels some kind of displaced guilt. And, you know, he's like, hey, you know, sorry, people of the world. And I guess to try to, I guess, prevent the political quagmire from getting, I guess, deeper or more involved, they're like, I'm going to make a blue. Make them blue. So you can't say, hey, they're black or they're Asian.
Yeah. I just find a lot of these type of themes and looking into it deeper. There's also a lot of people said a deeply green message, which some people don't like, and that's why they didn't like the film. They thought it was, you know, trying to preach to people and say, take care of the earth, take care of the planet, and so that's why they didn't like it. I always
I'm sorry. This ties in the conversation you and I have had in, like, you know, real life about the Wally backlash. Like, what is wrong with taking care of the earth?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, what is wrong with being more conscious? What is wrong with maybe not wasting so much energy? Because, you know, like, I mean, I understand people don't want to be preached to, people don't want to, you know, hit over the head, but I'm like, man, things are limited, you know? Maybe we might want to take care of things a little bit better than in the past.
Yeah. So I find things like that very interesting. And there's a lot of things that can be looked into with Avatar on a whole. But as we've discussed many times over, I think we're just kind of a broken record at this point. The most important thing about Avatar, the experience of the film, is something that should be applauded. And I think James Cameron is a brilliant filmmaker and a brilliant action filmmaker as well, because what he did with sci-fi, fantasy, and action in this film was along the lines of everything he's done with previous films, Terminator, Titanic, The Abyss, True Lies, like I talked about. We will leave out Piranha 2, The Spawning, and we'll just focus on the other films that he's done.
All right, so that wraps up this week in Flicks of Doom. So thank you for everyone for joining us, Justin, Eve, and Mr. Seabury. We all would like to thank you for listening. And please remember to email us at flicksofdoom@gmail.com and visit our Twitter at twitter.com/flicksofdoom. Also, visit geeksofdoom.com to see all the news stories and great reviews. And thanks for joining us this week, and let's all have a wonderful trip to the world of Pandora.